Create Your Own Life, episode 189.
You're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast, the show to help you create life on your terms. 3 days a week, Jeremy Ryan Slate interviews the most successful people in business and in life to help you create the life you want to create. Welcome to Life Creation Nation.
This episode is sponsored by Slate Media Productions. This is the new company that my wife and I have started. It is a done-for-you podcast solution, meaning if you are the busy business owner that does not have time to do anything but wants a podcast, wants all the PR associated with it, that's what we do. We get you in publications, we get your show out there, and we do absolutely everything for you. This is a turnkey solution. You can check it out over at www.slatemediaproductions.com. This episode is sponsored by Vital Sleep. Is your snoring or your bed partner snoring keeping you up, leaving you irritable and tired during the day? I want to tell you about the Vital Sleep Anti-Snoring Mouthpiece. It's FDA cleared, customizable and adjustable to your mouth, and reduces snoring on the very first use. Check them out over at www.vitalsleep.com and reclaim a good night's sleep. Hey, what's up, everybody? Jeremy here, and welcome to the latest episode of Create Your Own Life. Our guest today is nothing less than a natural-born coach. He was in real estate for a while, invested in some coaching, found out it was the difference between his success and not having success. And then he decided that he wanted to give that to other people. And he started a podcast called the Natural Born Coaches Podcast and went on to teach other people how to properly conduct a coaching business. And in this day and age, that's a super valuable thing with a lot of coaches out there not giving value. This guy is giving value and teaching others how to do it. His name is Mark Mawinney. Stoked to have Mark on the show today. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Mark Mawinney. So I'm really excited to have with us today Mark Mawinney on the Create Your Own Life podcast. He is going to tell us all about his business journey and also what he does as a coach. Mark, welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast.
Hey, Jeremy. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you, Mark. It's another exciting day on the show. I know I don't usually do a lot of morning interviews, so this is a great thing for me. I like actually talking to somebody first thing. What got you started in entrepreneurship, man? What was kind of the thing that you're like, you know what, I want to do something different?
It's really strange. I've been asked a question before, and I had to think because my parents aren't entrepreneurs. They're typical middle class, 9 to 5, you know, work somewhere for many, many years, and then now they're both retired. So it's not like, you know, some people that have had a couple generations of entrepreneurs dating back to like the 1800s in their family, and
they were
selling lemonade when they were 2 years old and in diapers. You know, that's not exactly my story, but I would have to say my journey started when I picked up, of course, I'm sure this book's been mentioned about 177 times on your show, but Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I was in a bookstore and back in high school and just stumbled across that book, and that was the first ever personal development, self-help type book, and I was just captivated, and that opened it up because I started to search out more and stuff. So when I you know, was going into university, I knew that, hey, I actually want to start a business, even though I'm doing an arts degree at the poli sci major. It's not like I'm gonna go work at the poli sci factory down the street, you know?
Right.
That led me into real estate right out of university at 21 years old. So that's sort of the short answer how I got into entrepreneurship.
Love that. And what was the start in real estate like for you, man? Because I think that can be a very rewarding but also a super tough business to be in as well.
Well, it's even tougher when you're 21 and you look about 14 or 15.
I've had that same experience my whole life, man, so I get it.
I stumbled across my first business card recently, and I'm thinking, man, how did I get a lot of clients? Because who the hell would have hired me, you know?
Right.
I look more, like the paper boy when I was showing up at someone's door, not the real estate agent. You know, it was interesting. It blocked everybody out because I can remember there's a fellow in my university degree in my university class who knew that I was going into real estate. And he basically said, oh, you don't want to get into that. I did that for 6 months and you'll starve. I always remember him saying, you'll starve. And, you know, it's funny because I won't say the fellow's name. I still remember him. He was an okay guy. He wasn't like he's my mortal enemy my whole life. I just always remember that kind of needled me when he said, you'll starve. And anytime it was going got tough in those early days in that first year of real estate, I just always remembered him. I thought, I can't quit because he's going to be thinking, oh, yeah, I told you so. So I got to make this work. So it was an important motivation for me.
Well, I think that's interesting, too, because I know through my business life, I've had experiences like that, too. And I think we inherit a lot of other people's thoughts sometimes to sometimes our motivation, but also our detriment as well. And we end up fighting battles we shouldn't even be fighting, right?
Oh, yeah. And it was interesting because I didn't have a huge network at 21, or at least not ones that were buying, selling houses. You know, my friends were in university and they weren't in that point in their life. Right. So that meant that I really had to get out there and connect with people who I didn't know, because if I was relying on my sphere of influence at 21, good luck. You know, they were probably playing Xbox or whatever video right. games and doing the university thing. So it was great to really force me to get out there. And it did help me because I've always been big on prospect. I know you've had Grant Cardone on your show. I love Grant and stuff like that. I really went 10X through those real estate years because I had to, or I would have starved. That fellow in my class would have been right.
And what kind of strategies were you employing when you first got started in real estate that allowed you to kind of get past a lot of this? Because, you know, you just mentioned Grant and he's talking about taking all that action, and obscurity a lot of times is our biggest enemy, especially when we're brand new, man.
Yeah, the first 6 months of real estate were quiet, but I knew that it was building up because I just kept working the phones. You know, we're talking back in 2000, so this was before social media. It sounds like ancient times. You know, I'm 38 now, but I feel sometimes like I'm a lot older when I think back to then. But what I did was pretty much every cent I was making from real estate was plowing back into my business. And I started to do more and more advertising. So I started to do a lot of radio advertising in my marketplace because we had a sweet deal, our company, with the radio station there. I was buying something like 10,000 yellow postcards, ugly, bright yellow postcards that I was just hammering my areas in my market with. I probably killed a couple forests, you know, with that, because this was before social media. And then what eventually happened was, as that got rolling, I started to get all this new business from my advertising efforts, but then I kept my foot on the gas with the prospecting as well. So I had a couple, you know, streams going there for clients. And that's how really I got rolling and started building my team and going from there.
You know, it's kind of funny, Mark, that you mentioned the ugly postcards, because I it's a lot of the marketing clients I work with are so hesitant to do postcards. But they actually create a ton of traffic, even though it's such an old school tool.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm in the process now with my coaching business launching a print newsletter, a monthly thing. And people would say, oh, my God, a print newsletter. You know, it's so 1980s. But I'm actually a subscriber for several print newsletters and I love them. I open them up the minute they come in the mail. They're very valuable. I keep them. I highlight them. I a lot of ways you treat them more seriously than, say, a PDF that gets lost on your desktop of your computer. So I'm a big fan of some old school stuff. I think they work great. It's not dead by any means.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you got moving in real estate. Things were going well, but you're not concentrating there anymore. What changed?
The short answer for that was a business closure. And actually, what happened was, after about a decade of nonstop success in real estate throughout my 20s, it was starting to feel like it was easy. And it was a lot of work, don't get me wrong, but I thought, wow, everything's working out. And my confidence level was through the roof. Unfortunately, when that happens, you start to do some things, you know, your confidence level gets too high in a lot of ways. You think, I can't fail. And 2009, I did fail. You know, I'd build up my company to about 100 agents and employees, and I had a few offices in different markets and just expanded too fast, made stupid moves. And our market really collapsed and really hasn't fully recovered here, you know, seven years later, and went out of business, you know, at that time. And I stayed in real estate for a couple more years doing some other things on the real estate investing end. That model didn't work. It wasn't going to work. And, you know, I shut that down. So I went through actually two closures in the span of, you know, less than 4 years after all those years of success. And that really, you know, hits the confidence and stuff. But that led me to where I'm at today. I wouldn't be talking to you today and doing everything with coaching here had that not happened. So it worked out, but it was definitely some rough years.
And what was that experience like then after that business closure that actually led you to coaching? Because I think that's super tough, man, when everything you put all that time into is just gone. And what do you even do at that point?
It's interesting because where you're at, you're in New Jersey, so it's a little different. There's a lot more going on where if I were in New Jersey, it probably wouldn't make the newspaper or certainly wouldn't be. It maybe it'd be page B20. It wouldn't be.
Well, I'm in Northwest Jersey. First of all, we have cows and farms and stuff like that.
So yeah, sorry to generalize. So I guess it would make the paper where you're at probably, but in my part of the world, I always say if a cat gets stuck in a tree, it's front page news. But it's a part of the world that really doesn't get entrepreneurship a whole lot. I'm in Atlanta, Canada. It's a little more conservative and starting to get there. But you always see it whenever there's a business that closes in my area, like a restaurant, for example, or it could be any business, a daycare, whatever. The media jumps on it. They're running stories. And then there's this feel, oh, look at the big, bad, you know, business owner closed and put all those people out of work. How dare he or she? And they're so evil. That's sort of the sense. And that's what my part of the world a lot of times is like. So that was difficult because I was getting kicked around by the media and stuff like that. I couldn't get a parking ticket without them, you know, running a story. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, is this a slow news day or what's going on here? You know, I had some people who, you know, and I'm not trying to blame them. They're doing their job. So, hey, you know what? It's newsworthy and you're dealing with all this stuff. But it got a little bit kind of silly after a while. Like, I remember doing a speech at a conference. Sure. You know, this was months after the closure, probably, I don't know, a year after the closure. And the local media shows up. Like, here's a big deal. You know, they're in the front, you know, row taking notes and stuff. And that's when it kind of got to a point where I said, you know what, screw you guys. I'm not holding back here. And you know what, do what you have to do, but I'm not going to hold back going after my goals because of, you know, some media stuff with it or ex-employees or anything like that. So it, on the other flip side of it, it was an important motivator because you want a way to get out of bed at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning without fail. You think of some of your haters and detractors and you'll pop right out of bed because you'll be thinking they're going to be laughing at you if you don't make it. So you got to do it.
Well, and I can really like understand that type of situation because being from a small town myself, I spent a lot of time in a network marketing business, which I don't do anymore. But that's one of those things that once you have one person that doesn't like you or has a bad experience, everybody knows pretty quickly. Yeah. So I can really understand where you're coming from.
Well, the funny thing is the city that that this happened in isn't a small 500 person town. You know, I think there's 70,000 people right in the city and 125,000 in the outer areas. But in many ways, it operates like a small town. And that's what I discovered with that process. But you know what? Everything happens for a reason. It sounds kind of like a Hallmark card to say one door closes, another opens. But really, I can tell you, I'm having a lot more fun coaching. And I'm also having a lot bigger impact what I'm doing now. I'm dealing with people all over the world. I'm not confined to my local sandbox, my local area with what I'm doing. So it did work out really well.
So how did you then just, you know, get started as a coach? Because I feel like it's one thing to say I want to do it, but then how do you actually identify the people you're going to work with and you know, I guess even know that you're going to be any good at it?
The seeds were planted coming out of that business closure because I had someone reach out to me who was an entrepreneur, lived about an hour away, didn't know who he was. And he reached out and he said, Mark, I saw your story in the newspaper. I've been through the same things. I want to chat. And he wanted to get together for coffee. I don't drink coffee, which people think is weird. So I went up and I think I had a hot chocolate when I met him. But we got together. I made the drive. Didn't really feel like socializing because I wasn't in that headspace, you know, where you're the most sociable dealing with it. But I said, you know what? I'm going to go up and meet him. It was just kind of a hunch. And we had a great chat. My energy level completely changed because I realized that, hey, this is in many ways a rite of passage for entrepreneurs. And, you know, he said, you know, you should be feeling good for going for it. You weren't one of the ones that just plays it safe and then regrets things and doesn't try anything. And that was a really important turning point for me. And he's still in my life today. We have it's more a mentor-mentee relationship than a paid coaching relationship, but he's an important part of what I'm doing now in my journey as well. And that planted the seeds because with the help of him and then some other people I connected with that were coaches that helped me, I thought, wow, what a great business, you know, this is. I would love to be in this and doing this. So that's how I got started in it.
And you also have this podcast too that has really impressive, you know, almost 500 interviews, Where did this kind of work into the whole starting your own coaching business practice?
Yeah, I started my coaching business probably a year before the podcast. And then in 2014, when I launched a podcast, it's interesting. I was looking for ways to really get the message out there. And I thought, am I going to hammer blogging? Am I going to really hit YouTube videos? What am I going to do? And I'd listened to podcasts since probably 2007, 2008. It was pretty early in the lifespan of podcasts, but I never actually thought of putting a podcast together. I had no clue how to do it. And I just did what most entrepreneurs do. I jumped off the cliff and prayed that I could build the plane before I hit the bottom. I bit off a lot there with that podcast because I decided to do a daily show, 7 days a week. I was handling all the editing and stuff. My brother Matt now has an editing business. He's been handling it since last summer, and he's doing a great job. I'm very happy to hand it off to him because I don't enjoy editing. But back then, I was doing all the editing and stuff, and luckily, I made it work. The first 300 episodes, it was a daily show. Now it's at a weekly show, but I'm spending the other time going out on shows like this. So keep him busy.
And was there a certain reason that you shifted from daily to weekly? Because I know for myself, we were originally publishing 5 days a week, and we shifted to three because I feel like the quality and what I was able to deliver kind of went down.
Yeah. What I was discovering was it wasn't leaving me enough time to focus on building my business. So I was churning out podcast after podcast. And I actually polled my community and asked them, hey, I'm thinking of originally I switched from 7 down to 5 days a week. I said, what do you think of this? And they said, awesome, because we can't keep up with all the shows. It's too much. Basically, I was throwing all these podcasts at them. And it's a little bit like you're at a buffet, and then you get eaten a whole lot. And it's like, you're stuffed, but someone keeps forcing food at you. It was almost too much.
Yeah.
So interestingly, what's happened is as I've moved my frequency from 7 shows a week down to 1 show a week, my business has skyrocketed. And it's because it's freed up so much more energy to create, to work with clients, to find clients, to go out on other shows. I'm usually going out on, lately it's been about 15 shows a month, just like this, to get out there. Mm-hmm. So that's where I found was better for me. I wasn't getting 7 times the bang for the buck doing 7 shows a week compared to 1. And my download numbers weren't hurt or anything either with it. So it's been good overall. I warn people, a lot of people jump in, out and they think, okay, I'm going to do it like Mark Mahoney's doing or like John Lee Dumas is doing, and I have to do it 7 days a week. You don't have to do it 7 days a week. Don't burn yourself out. You got to make sure you're building your business as well.
And I think that's a really, really great point, because some ways also we think we have to be like those people as well and not really have our own flavor of what we're doing. Before we move on though, Mark, I'm kind of interested to feel like to hear originally when you started this podcast a year into your business, what did it do for your business early on? It made you time later to kind of take back what you're doing, but what did it do for you early on?
Well, I made $1 million in my first 2 weeks of podcasting, so that was cool.
How did you do that?
If I knew that, I would be selling a program and a book and a whole bunch of stuff, speaking tour for podcasters. I make that joke because a lot of people do think, hey, I'll start a podcast and it's going to be a magic money tree in my backyard, and all these clients are going to be flowing to me. And, I got my first client directly from the podcast about 6 weeks into it, which some people say, oh, that's not too bad. But yeah, you have to remember I did 42 episodes in 6 weeks. It was close to a year's worth of normal shows if a show was doing weekly frequency. So I don't promise people, you're going to get your first client in the first 6 weeks. But what the podcast gave me was it gave me reach to reach people who I would have never spoken with before. There's people listening to it when I check the stats in countries I've never even heard of, and they may not have, or they wouldn't have stumbled across me had they not done that. And I think it helped with credibility too. People could check out the podcast, see that, hey, this isn't a guy that rolled out of bed this morning. Like a lot of people in coaching have that 7-figure dream and money signs in their eyes. They think, oh, I'm going to do 7 figures working 5 minutes a day because the Facebook ads are telling me I could do that. People could check out the website and the podcast and see everything I was doing and say, hey, this guy's actually serious and passionate about what he's doing. He's not a get rich quick type guy if he's put in these hundreds or thousands of hours doing this.
So the main focus of your actual coaching business, am I right to say that you actually help other people set up their own coaching businesses?
Yeah.
Or what's kind of the main practice of what
when
you
I
do?
Started coaching, I this has this for niche down. I said, I'll work with any entrepreneur. And actually, if somebody passed the fog the mirror test, I would work with them, you know. And what I did as time went on is some of my clients were from more traditional businesses, bricks and mortar and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then I had a couple clients that were coaches. And when I compared the two of them, I loved my sessions with the coaches. I loved the whole marketing, setting up their programs, the branding, just everything about it. And I didn't enjoy the other ones as much. And I said, this is kind of silly. I'm really enjoying, love one side of my business. I don't enjoy the other. And I said, I'm just going to focus solely on coaches. Coaches get the whole process of coaching. They believe in it, obviously, because they're doing it. But they also, they need a lot of help with their business because a lot of them aren't salespeople by nature. They want to help people, but they see sales as being kind of icky and somehow a bad thing. So that's where they're being held back. So I said, hey, I want to be a lot like Sam Phillips, a fellow who discovered Elvis when he went into Sun Records and cut that record for his mother. I want to kind of be the Sam Phillips for the coaching industry and help people who wouldn't have made it otherwise get going in the business.
I love that. That's a really great viewpoint to have, to be that next one to discover the great. That's always fun.
It is, yeah. No, and I've worked with some awesome people from all across tons of niches, you know, and ones that you wouldn't even think of that have worked with me. So that's a neat thing, is I can help health coaches, you know, relationship coaches, life coaches, just any of them I can help, because a lot of the things go across the board. The same issues are being seen from coaches in different niches. So that's a cool thing about it.
And it's interesting, because I was talking to our mutual friend Brian Wright last night, and he said that actually with your process, you've become a lot more selective with your coaching clients. Is that just talking about only working with coaches, or have you even niched that down a bit
as
well?
Yeah, I think what he is probably referring to, because I talk about this a lot on social media, is when it comes to the coaches I take on, I've become stingier. So what I discovered is not that I worked with a ton of horrible clients, but I worked with some clients that almost right away I'm like, oh man, I got to work with this person for the next 3 or 6
months.
Wow. I'm the type of person, I don't mind if someone's, let's say, for example, fearful and they're a little bit timid, because that's normal when you're getting into business. But I don't want to have to haul someone across the finish line or carry them. You know, if you're not willing to take initiative to do stuff, I can't do everything for you. You know, a coach, that's not the role of somebody in my position. I can, you know, help you along the path, and that's what I want to do, but I can't do everything for you. So I don't work well with people who are complete perfectionists that will never take action. If it takes you 4 months to complete a lead magnet PDF or to shoot a video, then you're probably not my person. I want to work. So, I mean, really quickly, I have a couple criteria that I always run people through the ringer on. I want to work with people who believe in coaching, people who take action. I want to work with people who like to have fun, because I joke around. I have a weird Canadian sense of humor, so I can't work with someone that's got a, you know, stick crammed up, you know where, and things like that. Obviously, I want to be paid what I'm worth and paid on time. That's important, and so on. So I've got 5 criteria every time I talk with someone that I'm comparing them against that as best as I can with before I start with someone. Because if I take on the wrong client, that's going to hurt my efforts with all my other clients, and then that's not good for anybody.
Absolutely. I can really understand that, though, because once you start hating what you're doing in one place, it can bleed into other parts of your business, and you're just really not able to be yourself and deliver what you want to deliver then as well.
Yeah, I worked with a fellow once who was a nice guy, but he seemed to expect an answer 5 minutes after he messaged me, which didn't.
Wow, I've had clients like that before. I understand.
He was a lot like Bill Murray's character in What About Bob? Remember, he was Richard Dreyfuss was his therapist or whatever. That's what he was like. He would get fidgety if I didn't answer within 5 minutes. And that's not my ideal client, you know. I'll answer my clients, but they have to realize I've got a busy business. I can't answer you right away. And, you know, it's funny, some of my best clients, I have to check in with them. I don't hear from them between our weekly sessions. And I used to feel bad, like, oh, I got to check in and see how they're doing. And they're like, no, I'm fine, Mark. We're on track, getting everything done. We'll chat with you Monday. I'm like, oh, okay, great. And that's happened from bumping my fees up. You know, I've had less trouble with clients as my fees have skyrocketed compared to before when I was charging peanuts years ago. And that's just the interesting thing. You charge more than your quality client generally is better. They're more invested, they're more committed, and they treat it more seriously.
Well, you mentioned, you know, different types of coaches, Mark. What separates a good one from a bad one? Because I think there's, especially out there in Facebook and online media, there's been a lot of videos and things like that going around right now talking about a lot of the people, especially in the online coaching space. What separates a good one from a bad one?
I mean, you ask that question, you'll hear from some people, like, they have to be great listeners and they have to be able to draw things out of you and stuff like that. My answer maybe falls more on the consulting side of things, where people say that, no, that's not coaching. But I'm really big on coaches being able to deliver results. So the client has to be the one that's doing the work. It's the client that it's their life and they have to do it. But I do think as coaches, we have to bring the best out of them and we have to help get them from point A to point B. So you see a lot of people in the online space that have never done anything. Say, for example, they've never grown a business and all of a sudden they're out there like, hey, I'll help you make 14 figures, you know, in the next 6 months, hire me and pay me $10,000 or whatever. And they've never actually grown a business or they've never had a happy marriage. And yet they're going to be the person to help, be a relationship coach or help people there and stuff like that. And it's just so easy. I mean, nowadays, like you said, you could just hop online and say anything and people who's going to call you out on it. So there is a lot of BS out there, which is frustrating for those of us who are legit and in it for the right reasons. But I do think at the end of the day, the cream rises to the top. And I've already seen it in the last 3 years. There were people who played that BS game, like, yeah, I make, you know, millions of dollars a year, when they're living in their parents' basement. They've got $8 in their bank account and they don't last very long. You know, the industry has people can sense that BS and sniff it out after a while. They might be able to get a client once, but they're not getting referrals from that client.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, though, because the video that does keep coming to mind is JP, I forget his last name, where he talks about his sales funnel, and he goes, and once you get in my funnel, you're never getting out of that bitch.
He's the red-haired fellow with the beard, right?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I like that one.
Awesome. Well, I want to get a little bit into your personal skill set. What do you think has been your biggest skill, and how did you develop that skill?
I think the biggest thing, it's not always sexy, but it's consistency, you know, and being disciplined. So I've been able to do the things I have to do every day that I know work, and then I know business will come from it. And I think that comes from the real estate days. So back in real estate, I always had a rule that I'm going to make 20 cold calls a day, for example. And if I make 18 one day, then I'm going to make sure I make 22 the next day to catch up on that. And that's just something I always did. It's a numbers game, regardless of the business you're in, real estate or in coaching. So I'm always consistently out there in people's faces. I'm, you know, posting a lot and doing all the same things every day that work, you know, between the podcast. I do daily emails to my list, which some people say, oh my gosh, how can you do daily emails? You know what? People have time to binge watch the latest season of The Walking Dead. They have time to do emails. So daily emails and so on. So I say that consistency and discipline has probably been the biggest strength.
Have you been spying on my Netflix account, Mark? I got to
know. Full disclosure, I just finished season 6 of The Walking Dead, but the difference is I did it late at night after I got done all my other stuff. I made sure that I'm doing my business, making my sales, getting clients before I watch Rick and them, you know, hack a bunch of zombies' heads off.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, though, the thing you mentioned about daily emails as well, because I had a lot of back off on that, too, so till I read Russell Brunson's .com Secrets book, where he's big on daily emails.
He is, and the one that really got me turned on to daily emails was Ben Settle. I had Ben on my show, and then I got involved in his email players program, and he's the one that converted me to daily emails. And then Ryan Lee in Connecticut from Freedom. Ryan's big on daily emails. I'm in his Freedom group and stuff. So yeah, there's some really smart people who swear by the benefits of daily emails, how it works. But then I get Joe, who's never made a sale, or Mary from email, saying, oh, it's too much. Just do once a month or just do once a week or whatever. And then I'll say, oh, yeah, well, how many clients have you gotten from your emails? And that's crickets. So if I have to choose between Ben Settle and Ryan Lee, who know what they're doing, or Joe or Mary, who are just, you know, full of it, I'm going to go with the experts in that case. And that's why I do daily emails.
And what do you tell yourself when somebody, I guess, on your email list or something makes a comment like that? Is that more of a, that's not my client type of person, or what's your response to that?
You know, what's funny. I've gotten a really thick skin over the years. It probably was from 2009. When you get called every name in the book by some people and stuff, tends to give you a thick skin. So, you know, it always bothers you when you get criticism and feedback, but it doesn't really bother me a lot. I tend to just say, you know, if it's legitimate feedback, someone knows what they're talking about, then obviously I listen to it. But if it's just something like, hey, I don't like daily emails, it's too much, dude, back off, by, you know, monkeyboy1943@gmail.com or something, you know, I would rather lose them. I would rather not have them on my list, have a smaller list, but have people on that appreciate it. So since I've been doing the daily emails, I started them April 11th. So we've been going through quite a few of them now and have never missed a day. And I can tell you that my engagement is up significantly. My clients from my email list and my sales from my online program are up a lot. And anyone that I lost would not have bought anyways. So it's no harm done. I'm not going to worry about that, but I'm a huge believer in it. I preach it to my clients, and I'm getting some of my clients into it now as well. I just feel so strongly about daily emails.
Mm. Well, to that end, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I read something from fellow Canadian Robin Sharma before in one of his books. It was an acronym, KMF, and KMF stands for Keep Moving Forward. So Keep Moving Forward is a great piece of advice. I didn't hear directly from Robin Sharma, but I did read it in one of his books. And I always remember that because you know what it's like being an entrepreneur. One day you're on cloud nine, life is great, the birds are chirping, and everything's, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. And then the next day it's something happens. It's, oh my God, it's the end of the world. You know, I hate this. I'm going to go, you know, run away to the mountains somewhere. I'm done. Right. And you have to be able to ride those highs and lows. And I find KMF reminds me of that. So keep moving forward.
Well, and the funny thing is that might even happen several times in a day.
It happened just before I hopped in this call three times now.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's interesting. It's entrepreneurship definitely can play games with your head, and it's not for everybody. I mean, some people just can't handle that. They want to know when they're getting paid, how much they're getting paid. They don't want to have any surprises. Me, I'm just wired differently. I've never had an actual job, really, so I couldn't do it. But some people, the entrepreneurship's not for everybody, you know. Don't try to fit into that box if it's not you. You have to be willing to put up with some sleepless nights and some rough times if you're going to be in business for yourself.
Sure. And what does the next 12 months look like for you and your business, Mark?
You know, it's funny. I have goals, obviously, but anytime throughout, you know, even the last 3 years coaching, every 6 months looks different than what I'd thought, you know, so I never thought I'd be launching a podcast. And, you know, a year ago, I started a Facebook group, which I hadn't even thought of doing. Now it's up to 3,000 coaches in a year, you know, with no paid advertising. It's just crazy. That's the coachingjungle.com, by the way. I'll put a shameless plug in there if people want to check it out. But yeah, so I don't know in a year's time. You know, I've got my goals for it, the print newsletter I'm launching, and that's going to be a monthly subscription model. I'm excited about that. And just looking to keep getting better, you know, be the best me. And that should, I guess, be the goal for everybody, is just constant personal development. So that's my goals for 2017.
All right. This episode is sponsored by iBoom Media. If you are looking to get your brand out there in the right way and actually grow your social media following, these are the guys you want to talk to. Taking my Instagram following from around 1,800 to now we're around 11,700. My Facebook following from 800 to now 39,000. Wow. And my Twitter following is now closing in on 5,000. So these guys do an amazing job. And they are not just grabbing followers, they're actually finding people that interact, retweet your stuff, like your stuff, and will possibly buy your product or service. So you can check them out over at www.iboommedia.com. Well, Mark, we're running low on time, but before we go, are you ready for some rapid-fire questions?
Yeah, sure. Fire away.
You are selected to give a commencement speech. What topic do you cover and why?
Keep moving forward.
Love it. Do you have a quote that you've leaned on through your journey?
Yeah, I've actually have a quote by Ayn Rand, which is probably one of my favorite quotes. And she said, the question isn't who's going to let me, it's who's going to stop me. And I absolutely love that quote.
I'm a huge Ayn Rand fan myself. My favorite quote from her is actually, it's not money that's the root of all evil, but the love of money that's the root of all evil. Yeah.
Atlas Shrugged, I did the audiobook a few summers ago. It took 65 hours, and which was crazy. Every day for an hour or two, I'd listen to it when I was like going for a walk or at the grocery store. And yeah, I think it's required reading for any entrepreneur. It's great.
To that, I guess to that end, do you have a book that's really had a big effect on your career?
Yeah, I mean, the book that has really impacted me, it's called Thick Face, Black Heart by Chin-Ning Chu. Not sure if you've read that one.
That's an interesting name. I haven't heard that one.
Not a lot of people have here in the West. So it's kind of a combination between The Art of War and Think and Grow Rich and, you know, things like that. And I'm actually going on a podcast we're recording later this week, and that's the focus of it. It's a podcast talk about books, and that's a book I chose because I just think so highly of it. So I found out about the book a few years ago. I wish I had it in 2009 going through that closure, because that's a perfect book. Anyone that wants to get a thicker skin, read that book. That book's awesome.
Well, this is the toughest one I've got for you today, Mark. When you think of the word leadership, what person comes to mind?
Oh boy, leadership. I'd probably say Donald Trump. No, I'm just kidding. I'm staying out of the American election debate there. Everyone's going all crazy, even in Canada. We're not even in your country, and we're all going crazy over this thing. You know, leadership, when I'm looking at it, going to politics, though, I mean, I will get political. Ronald Reagan, for me, is someone that stands out probably as my favorite president. I love his sunny optimism. And, you know, it's something nowadays it's hard for people to realize looking at the current crop of candidates because you don't see that. But Ronald Reagan comes to mind often when I think of leadership.
I actually have a t-shirt that has Reagan's face on it. This is old school conservative.
You have the cowboy boots too.
I do not. Actually, I have cowboy boots. We don't wear them together though. So
yeah. Yeah. And Thick Face, Black Heart talks about Ronald Reagan, by the way, it compares him to Jimmy Carter. And it talks about how Jimmy Carter was a smart guy and stuff, but he overthought things and he almost talked aloud to the American public about fears and everything else. And he scared the bleep out of the public and they felt all this malaise and, you know, depressed and stuff. And then Reagan, you know, was made fun of. Here's an actor that acted with a monkey and he's not smart and he's old and all this other stuff. And look how Reagan made people feel. I mean, a total contrast to Jimmy Carter versus Reagan. And that's why Reagan and that book, Thick Face, Black Heart, stick out to me.
Well, people have very different definitions of success, Mark, but if you got to define it for yourself, what does it mean?
The best definition of success I heard actually comes from Bob Dylan. I'll cheat. I got it from someone. But he has a quote. He said, a man is a success if he gets up in the morning and gets to bed at night, and in between he does what he wants to do. And that's probably the closest I've been able to come to finding a perfect definition for success. Now, the question then comes, well, what if I want to sit around on the couch all day and eat Doritos and drink beer? Is that successful? Because I'd be happy if I get up and do that till bed. That would be the asterisk I put on there, but hey, if that makes you happy, who knows? But yeah, that's the best definition.
And did he finish that quote off with, and Mr. Tambourine Man?
I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure, but that's a good question.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate you coming out and hanging out with us. This has been a ton of fun, man. If our audience wants to connect with you and learn more about what you're doing, where's the best place to do that?
Yeah, best spot is naturalborncoaches.com, or I'm in the Facebook group a lot helping people there. So it's thatcoachingjungle.com will direct to the Facebook group.
Awesome. Well, Mark Mawinney, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Thanks, Jeremy.
So I hope you guys enjoyed hanging out with Mark and I today. He had a ton of value to give. You can check him out over at naturalborncoaches.com. You can also check out his podcast, the Natural Born Coaches Podcast. Also want to make a shout out to Brian K. Wright for connecting Mark and I. I am eternally grateful as Mark had a lot of great information for the audience. You can check out the show notes for this episode over at jeremyryanslate.com/189. Rock on, everybody. Have an amazing weekend.
Now go out there and create your own life. Motivation may be great, but action is better. Get it done, my friends.